You are listening to ListCast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, leave a comment, or perhaps suggest a top 5 list for us to do on the show, you can drop us a line at listcast5@gmail.com or visit our website at listcast.podomatic.com. Now on with the show. Welcome to ListCast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Justin.
Our topic for today is scenes that give you goosebumps. And Justin's going to start us off today with his number 5.
Okay, I do have my 5 choices, of course. I did, just before I start going here, I do have my number 1 choice saved until the end. The 4 preceding it, I think, are kind of interchangeable, but I did rank them kind of on the order I guess I wanted to talk about them. And so my number 5 is the scene from The Godfather where...
I'm not going to know this because I don't know The Godfather very well.
Well, you're really missing out. The scene in The Godfather when Michael is outside of the hospital after his dad, Marlon Brando, has been shot. And he's standing outside the hospital.
Nobody's watching my father! Isn't that what it is? He's running down the hallway or something?
Kind of what I'm talking about. But specifically, he's waiting outside and there's one of the Corleone goons that's assigned to the front door. And Michael shows up.
It's really hard for me to take that movie seriously now because of Mafia.
Anyway.
Sorry.
He goes to the hospital and...
Am I cutting you off too much?
Just a little. He realizes that the guards that should be inside are gone, that there's been some sort of snafu, and he realizes something's wrong, and that there's probably going to be a follow-up hit made towards his dad. So he goes outside where the one guy left is standing there. Nobody is inside except for this one guy. And he goes out there, and he's just about to explain to him, hey, something's going on here. We're going to have trouble. Expect trouble. And right at that moment, this car pulls up to the front, and it's all dark, it's all mysterious, and you see these two goons on the inside of the car, and you know that these are the guys that Michael's talking about. And this guy, who is supposed to be a Corleone goon, is starting to panic. And Michael, who is not a mobster at all, sees this. He looks right in the guy's eyes, and he sees this, and... he asked him for a light, or the other guy asked Michael for a light. And, or is it the other way around? Michael tells the guy to pull out his lighter, and the guy does, and his hand is shaking. And Michael does something, and his hand is perfectly steady. And Michael sees that, he physically looks at the two hands, the other guy's hands and his hands, and sees that his hand is stone. And he, in that moment, realizes that he's actually cut out for this line of work and that he's keeping a cool head. And, you know, then the whole scene progresses where they go and they save the dad and everything. But that moment was beautiful because it was done without words. It was all done with the flick of the lighter, the light of the cigarette. And it was just a beautiful moment. It was a beautiful moment without words, which I very badly described.
I think you did fairly well.
I should have rewatched that scene to see the order that it played. Well, but I always remember the moment, the moment where he looks at his hand.
Had it been a while since you've seen this?
Yeah, because The Godfather is not something that has tremendous immediate rewatchability. You know, it's something you pop in once a year or something.
That's true.
But
even though I haven't seen it.
Yeah, you know, the elements and the order of that scene, I'll forget the details, but that moment where he looks at that shaking hand and he sees his steady hand and he knows that he's in for a lifetime of this, I found beautifully done. On to you. What's your number 5?
My number 5 is... it's going to seem a little lame, I guess, in comparison to yours, from Return of the Jedi.
Oh, shit. What are you doing?
Conversation between Luke, Vader, and the Emperor when the Emperor is electrifying Luke, and Luke is on the floor, you know, writhing in pain, you know, Father, please save me. And they have these shots going back and forth between Luke, the Emperor, and Vader, and the Emperor's just going, and they show these shots of Vader, and Vader is a mask. He's nothing but a mask, and you see emotion in this dark visage.
Right. In fact, the only movement he has is he's turning from he's left looking, to right, looking up and
left
down,
and right, and at last maybe a few seconds, looking left and right between Luke and the Emperor, and you can see in his dark eyes him making a choice.
Right.
He decides to save his son, and he picks up the Emperor, and the music builds beautifully.
The music tells the story of his emotions.
Oh, definitely. He picks him up, and you see this, and then there's a reaction shot of Luke as he's looking up as the energy pulses come off of him. Mm-hmm. He looks up, and he sees that his dad's made a choice, and Vader just picks him up, and he starts taking all that, taking all that pain that he was giving to Luke, and just tosses the Emperor down a conveniently placed
big chute,
big hole. And
well, there's no window to throw him out of. So.
No.
Although, why is that big reactor core in the Emperor's office, essentially?
Nevertheless.
But yes, I totally agree. That scene is,
I guess, incredible. And that scene just continues, when Luke comes after he's
absolutely
thrown him over. And there's several great moments in that whole room that take place in the Emperor's chambers.
But yeah, that finale moment, between Luke and Vader, is kind of broken up into pieces. But yeah, that moment
in particular is very well done. That's my number
five. I totally
agree
with you.
Okay, right, on to your number four.
My number four, this is one that I think, I don't even know for sure if you've seen this movie, but it's a movie that I thoroughly enjoyed the first time I saw it. It's a cartoon, Aim for Kids, Jimmy Neutron, Boy Genius.
Okay, I think I know which moment you're talking about.
And I'm not talking about the show, I'm talking about the movie.
I didn't know that was a show.
Yeah, they originally were going to this was going to be the show, but apparently either the footage or the story that they turned out so well that the studio said, no, flesh it out, make it a 90-minute movie.
I didn't know that.
And they juiced up the rendering effects for it, as opposed to the show, which looks a little more blocky. But the moment in that movie that I just absolutely love is when all of his friends, Jimmy and Carl and Fat Kid and all that stuff, all get ready to launch up to go to meet the aliens in space. And I'll tell you,
I've only seen this movie once, but I do remember that scene. That it's a pretty cool scene.
That moment, I don't know what, I mean, there's so many parts of it that I actually like, and it kind of touches me on a visceral level. But the second you hear that blast off, dink, and boom, the music starts, and Kids in America starts playing. We're the Kids in America.
Oh, whoa.
The song is great. It just gives you this energy. But on a technical level, I felt the editing of that sequence was absolutely perfect. There is not a second, not a frame of that sequence that I would change. It is absolutely perfect. The timing of each shot, the staging of each shot, and I, as a lifelong film goer, forget that this is a bunch of kids with no outer space protection. They're just going up in these open rocket ships sort of things.
Open cockpits,
all that ludicrous stuff totally is washed away as they start to converge on each other and blast off from separate locations. I mean, it's epic. And they all form together, and they're going up into the stratosphere, into the mesosphere, into the ionosphere, and how come they all end in fear? And then, Jimmy, this is it, baby. Rockets! Nothing. And then they start drifting back to Earth, and you think, uh-oh, and you're into this. And believe me, it's built up to this point. And then all the rockets go off. Boom! We're the Kids in America! And it's, oh, man, it is... It's Return of the Jedi. It's the building, the climax, and it's gorgeous. The sad thing is that all the movie is sort of anticlimactic to that moment. Mm-hmm. The rest of the movie is good, but that scene steals it. And to this day, will stop me in my tracks, and I'll turn it up and watch it.
Cool. Kind of making me want to check it out now.
No, I want to watch it now.
Okay, my number four. is from Contact with, Jodie Foster, based on the novel.
Okay, wait. Before you go, I'm going to guess what scene you're talking about.
I think there's only two that it could be.
Well, I don't know. There's a couple scenes in that movie.
True.
Are you going to be going for the scene when Jake Busey blows up the thing?
No, not that scene.
Shit. All right.
That is a cool scene, though.
Yeah. played on monitors.
To me, it came down to two scenes.
Yeah.
And the first scene being the contact scene, where she's sitting on the hood of her car, listening to her headphones.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the actual ending contact scene.
Where she's listening to her headphones, and she's found out that they're pulling the plug on her budget.
Right.
And she picks up the signal, and there's a big rush to, make sure it's, extraterrestrial and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And the other scene being the ending scene, where she gets in the pod and is thrown into the wormhole, and then she's her dad.
Right.
Which, besides that, I remember being so disappointed when I saw the picture, when I saw the image of her dad, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, where are my goddamn aliens, man? But anyway, that scene, the ending scene, where she's, put into her spacesuit, and she's guided down the ramp into her little pod.
Right.
And, the sound effects, this, of the
pod.
Yeah, whatever that gyro-looking thing, they called it. And she's being slowly prepped. And I remember watching this for the first time, and just the tension was so high, because the build-up, the whole movie was built to this, You knew she was going to go. You just didn't know how.
Right.
And then they start doing the countdown, and the bass starts building up, and the whole craft starts shaking, and everybody in Mission Control is getting nervous. They want to abort, and she's doing that, ready to go, and the.
Well, if you're reading me, I am okay to go. Okay to go.
85%.
All bearing tips are on the profile.
90%. We're detecting some structural instability.
Confirmed. Is she whole?
We're within limits. Barely.
I'm okay to go.
The blind guy's like, right. she says she's ready to go. And then they launch her, and she goes through a series of wormholes, they're constantly building up in tension as she's going through each of these, and then slowly slows down, and she slowly drifts off into a sort of like a Star Trek holodeck-esque type thing.
Right.
Where she sees her dad. But yeah, that's kind of the scene in a nutshell. And I still watch it today with tension, even though I know how it's going to end. It still gets to me.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. It's a good build. It definitely puts you in the perspective of that character, and allows you as the audience to experience her journey in that moment, as opposed to sort of feeling like an observer. You really feel like it's happening to you. And I know, of course, just about everybody has the same mentality towards the avatar like play of the dad being the alien, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people have issue with that it was a cop out, but when I saw it, I wanted to see aliens, but at the same time I did come out of it going, there's nothing they could have done that would have lived up to my expectations.
Yeah.
And I actually prefer it being this way.
And
when she, when they finally show her drop through and be caught at the end, you think, well, dang, maybe she did dream it. And then that just beautiful last 30 seconds of the movie when Angela Bassett says, you said that she recorded static, but how come you recorded
18 hours of static?
18 hours or something of it. Yeah, that. Yeah. Oh, that was great. That was the final smile, to wrap up that movie.
Okay, that's my number four. On to your number three. What do you got?
All right. My number three comes from the most quotable movie of all time, Steel Magnolias, The Funeral Scene.
Oh, man. I can't believe I didn't think of that.
I do not care who you are, man or woman. if you...
I think a lot of guys won't
agree. Many men have not seen this movie. However, if you are made to sit down and watch this... Now, I'm coming from someone who genuinely likes it, but I'm saying someone who maybe doesn't like chick flicks, if you want to classify this as a chick flick. If you're made to sit down and watch this movie, I challenge you to A, not be caught up by the characters, and B, not to at least well up a little bit at the end when they're at Shelby's funeral. That is an acting tour de force. And Sally Field just steals it.
I can jog all the way to Texas and back, but my daughter can't. She never could. Oh, God, I'm so mad. I don't know what to do. I want to know why. I want to know why Shelby's life is over. I want to know how that baby will ever know how wonderful his mother was. Will he ever know what she went through for him? Oh, God, I want to know why. Lord, I wish I could understand. No. It's not supposed to happen this way. I'm supposed to go first. I've always been ready to go first. I don't think I can take this. I just want to hit somebody till they feel as bad as I do. I just want to hit something. I want to hit it hard.
Here. Hit this. Go ahead, Malin. Slap her.
Are you crazy?
Hit her. Are you high, Clary?
Clary, have you lost your mind?
We'll sell T-shirts saying I slapped Weezer Boudreau. Hit her.
Miss Clary, enough.
Weezer, this is your chance to do something for your fellow man. Knock her lights out, Malin.
Let go of me.
Malin, you just missed a chance of a lifetime. Half a Chicopin parish will give the eye teeth to take a whack of Weezer.
Oh. You are a pig from hell.
Didn't you use this scene once in like a best scene montage you did for school or something?
Oh yeah, I did. There was a project I had for one of my classes where we had to talk about ourselves and things that made us who we are, and I, being a major film buff, actually did a montage of film moments and things like that, and I did use as a full scene that played out Steel Magnolias, the funeral scene, because it is a great example of acting, of writing, and how creators, whether they be the writers, the directors, the actors, whatever, can manipulate your emotions. And It is just an absolutely gorgeous example of...
Well, give us a short breakdown of the scene for those who
basically
aren't...
Basically, all the women that had been in the movie at this point are at Shelby's funeral. Shelby being...
the daughter of Sally Field.
Yes. And Julia Roberts. She has died. And the mom, Sally Field, is trying to hold it in. She's being the brave soldier. All the men have left. And all the women around her are crying and feeling bad for her because she's being so internally destroyed. And someone makes a comment about her hair and that it was something Shelby would have said. And then she just starts breaking down and she just lets it all out. She's screaming, she's crying, and she's just tearing at everything. And then in a truly brilliant moment...
Well, this is one of Sally Field's best acting roles.
And just when the emotions, the sad emotions, are at their peak and there is nowhere to go but down, right at that moment, they brilliantly interjected comedy in just the right amount where...
To lighten it up.
To lighten the mood where Olympia Dukakis grabs Weezer, shoves her at Malin, and tells her to sock her, to knock her lights out. And everyone starts laughing, and it's okay to laugh. And it was gorgeous. It's a 5-minute scene.
Doesn't Olympia Dukakis say something in that regard? She says, I had to do something. It was getting too serious there.
Yeah, she tells you exactly why that scene is there. It was getting entirely too serious. We had to laugh. And she was absolutely right. From a a level of people, and then from a film point of view, because there's nowhere else to go. But anyway, that was my number three. So your number three.
Now. Yeah. My number three is from The Abyss.
Oh, my.
What? Did you have a guess about what?
Jesus. All right, let me think. Okay, you're a cynic, so I'm going to say it's not...
I'm a cynic.
I'm going to say it's got nothing to do with the actual alien stuff towards the end.
It isn't.
Yeah, I know you. I know you. I'm going to say for you, it is the either the actual death in, you know, drowning in the water of... What's her character's name? Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio's character.
I can't remember.
Whatever her name is, either the scene where she drowns with Ed Harris, or the scene where she is then revived.
Yeah,
you've never backed away from anything. You're like,
yeah. That's it. You got it. It's the resuscitation from the abyss.
I actually would have thought you'd gone for the drowning first, but okay, go ahead.
Because I'm a cynic.
No, just because it's
maybe you don't know me as well.
If I had to choose between those two, I would say you would go for the least obvious and go for the scene that kind of really gets you because she's sacrificing herself.
I wouldn't call it... Well, you're breaking up those scenes.
Well, yeah.
To me, it's one long it's scene. It's her drowning and her resuscitation.
All right, I see it.
To me, it's both those
moments. I understand.
You're right. For anybody who hasn't seen this movie, I'm sure they have, but... what's her name?
Mary Elizabeth Master
Antonio. God, her name's too damn
Where long. Is she gone?
I know, she's disappeared.
She was great.
Her and Ed Harris are, you know... In this little submersible, the water's coming in, and they have no way to survive.
They only have one suit.
One suit. Ed Harris is wearing the suit, and that's just the
body
way,
part of the suit.
Yeah. So he, she says, put on the helmet. You drag me back. I'll drown, and you can revive me.
Because the water's so cold.
Because the water's so cold, she's going into hypothermia, and blah blah blah, and a lot of tension during that because he's got to watch her drown right in front of him, and she does, and he drags her back. To whatever that thing is called, I can't remember. God, it's
been a
forgotten
while
the specifics
since I've seen
of this
it.
Movie. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, drags her back to the main vessel.
Right,
brings her in, and the whole crew gathers, and there's more emotion for Ed Harris because they were married at one time. These two characters, and he's still they're still secretly in love with each other. Whatever, and they start giving her the paddles clear and he she flatlines basically and then he just says fuck it no then he gives the you never backed away from anything in your life now fight and he starts slapping her.
No, she has a strong heart, she wants to live. Come on, ladies. Come on, baby. Come on, breathe, baby. God damn it, breathe! God damn it, you bitch! You never backed away from anything in your life! Now fight! 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 Right now! Do it! Fight, god damn it! Fight! Fight! Fight!
Fight! Everybody's looking at him like, dude, you gotta stop. She's gone, And it's all Ed Harris, it's all on him. He just lets it all out and
doesn't it pretty much cut to close-ups just of his face and her face
just screaming at her and he starts hitting her and he's like I don't know how he pulled it off as well as he's a great actor and that's the only reason, but he just starts smacking her around until eventually she comes to and I can just watch that scene and it still gets me way down deep.
It's a good scene. I wouldn't have thought of it. It is an excellent scene. Yes, the two elements definitely play as a single part.
Yeah.
But given the two, I'm actually kind of partial to the beginning half, just because it's what's not said that to me is kind of affecting when they're scrambling inside that pod and his first instinct is to look for another suit or helmet, something she can wear to, oxygen, something to get out. And I think they did have oxygen breathers there or something, but they all didn't work or something. Mm-hmm. And there's the moment that plays on their faces when they realize they're fucked and one of them will die. And these two people who up to this point had been bickering. Of course, it's all kind of from this hidden love thing, but they're both saying, no, you go, no, you go. And it's a great moment.
All right, number two for you.
Okay, I was really afraid you were going to do this, and y'all damn near did.
I hope you... Okay, go ahead.
My number two is the Return of the Jedi Luke and Vader fight. It's not the action... I mean,
that was my... I was choosing between the two.
See, this is what I'm saying about you. You know, you don't go for the obvious. You go for the one just right next to it. You know, you're the Top Gun. What's his name? What do they call him in Top Gun? Tom Cruise?
Maverick?
Yeah, you know, you're the Maverick. They make the comment in Top Gun that Maverick, although he's like an ace pilot and could easily be number one, he's always number two, and he likes it there. You know, and
that's right, Ice Man.
Yeah, exactly. You pick the Mavericks all the time, but okay. And that's my, and I mean that as a compliment. You know, you kind of see things a little differently. But the actual scene where Luke at this point is hiding from Vader after they've squared off for a little bit, and Vader's taunting him.
You have a twin sister. Your feelings have now betrayed her too. Obi-Wan was wise to hide her from me. Now his failure is complete. If you will not turn to the dark side, then perhaps she will.
It is just gorgeous. The actual physical motions of their fighting isn't terribly impressive. If you were to take that scene and look at it on mute, it's really not that great. You know, from a technical point of view, as far as the choreography or whatnot, up until the end. But just when they're swinging at each other, it's kind of in a wide shot and all that. It could be anybody, any movie. But the music is telling you what's going on. It is these are two people that were destined to square off against each other. And when
unlike the prequels, you know, this isn't a, you know, choreographed.
This feels like real people fighting.
The power of the scene is in the emotion.
Yeah.
And this isn't a, you know, choreographed duel.
No, more to the point, when that fight ends, it ends with Luke, who is just boiling with rage, literally pounding at Vader. Vader's on the ground, just holding up that lightsaber, blocking Luke's attacks, and Luke is hacking at him. That is not compared to the prequels, you know, how Jedi's fight with all this elegance and grace. He's pissed off and he is hacking at this guy until he finally lops his hand off.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the music is accompanying this, and it's a musical tonal relief when he finally does. And I swear, I mean, you see it, Luke lets out this sigh.
The music is beautiful,
and it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous moment. Everything I'm saying is gorgeous. but anyway, that was my number two. I mean, everyone really knows
everything we have is sensational.
Sorry. How are the eggs?
Sensational.
Okay.
An
omelet.
Okay, so is that...
So that's my number two. I mean, really, everyone knows that, so...
All right, my number two... From Star Trek III, it would have probably been the destruction of the Enterprise, but that scene is a little short, so I decided to do Stealing the Enterprise.
Well, of course.
Stealing the Enterprise from Star Trek III is a beautiful fucking sequence.
Yeah, I cannot tell you why that's not on my list. I don't know why.
I can't believe you hadn't mentioned this yet. And
I think it was so obvious I didn't bother going.
It is obvious, but I love this moment. It is so perfectly done. Everything about it, you know? And everybody, you know, is familiar with the Star Trek movies, and Star Trek III is the most underrated Star Trek film. And true. You got this great build-up to when you know Kirk and his crew are going to have to make a choice to go save their friend, to go save Spock, so they have to steal the Enterprise out of space dock. And they just, you know, they were told, no, you can't go to Genesis, and he's like, you know, I need a ship. He's like, no, so he's like, fuck it, I'm going to take mine. So they, you know, him and Chekov, Scotty, and Sulu go aboard the Enterprise and just, you know, back it right out of space dock. And the Excelsior starts chasing him, and there's this tension of, like, can they get the space dock doors open? You know, and Scotty's like, you know, well, I'm trying. He's like, no, the door's been just got it. Sir, I'm working on it, you know. And
now, Mr. Scott. Sir? The doors, Mr. Scott. Hi, sir, I'm working on it.
Danger. Base doors are closed. Danger. Danger. Base doors are
cleared space doors.
The music, you know, James Horner, you know, did the score for Star Trek 2 and 3.
Sure.
And that is the best Trek music, you know, in
that
all of
that is Star Trek.
That is Star Trek, you know, that is just the best. And that scene has some great fucking music building up, especially to when those doors open and that reveal of when they open and, you know, the ship backs out, you know, and just
it is a great example of how editing and music
yeah.
add up together to give you a release mm-hmm. and when those doors open, that's the release. Yeah, to absolutely.
I mean, absolutely. They're the good guys, you know, they're gonna get away, but the way they do it was just
but yeah perfect. For those few seconds
yeah.
your heart is beating right there
because they barely like they show that ship coming back because it's backing up, which you hardly ever see in Star Trek, a ship reversing.
Yeah,
it's reversing. And you see its warp nacelles about to hit, and the doors start opening just in the nick of time, and it squeaks out, and then you see it turn about, and pulls away. Beautiful scene. But that's all I have to say
couldn't
about
agree
that.
More. Couldn't agree more.
Okay, give me your number one.
All right, well, anyone who knows me knows where I'm going with this. My number one favorite scene is from Superman the movie, the helicopter rescue scene.
What the hell is that?
Easy, miss. I've got you.
You've got me? Who's got you?
I can't believe it. I just cannot believe it. He got her.
This has it all. It has the hero. It has the damsel in distress. It has tension, action, resolution, music. It's got everything. And I would say it starts when you see Clark running across the street, opening up the shirt, going through. Mm-hmm. Hey, Jim, whoa, it's a bad outfit. Excuse me. Whoa. And then up he goes. Not only does she fall and he catches him or he catches her, which is that could have been it right there. Double jeopardy. The helicopter comes down. What does Superman do? He smiles and catches that thing like he's swatting a fly. And the look he gives her holding the helicopter, the crowd watching. Oh, I'm telling you, you know, Superman is one of the few superheroes on film that whose exploits can be done in front of a crowd. So you get that audience participation feeling. Batman, his exploits are done at night and he doesn't want to be seen. Superman does his stuff in broad daylight. Granted, this scene happened at night, but he wasn't making any attempt to hide who he was. You don't wear red and blue spandex with the intention of being hidden. He was out there for the world to see, and the music builds and exposes Superman in the most beautiful way. Lands it, has a cute little exchange with Lois and flies off. It's great. My favorite. Gives me chills every single time.
Okay, my number one. as I said, they kind of go hand in hand. They kind of have the same effect on me.
Okay.
But because a character dies in this, I had to give this number one, and that's from Star Trek II.
All right. Yeah, I do.
When this is very obvious, Spock sacrifices himself for the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Although many would disagree, I prefer Star Trek III over Star Trek II. Especially these days.
It's because of the pacing.
Pacing. I think Star Trek II is a little heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Three as, to me, much more organic.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's almost like two was the exposition and three was the payoff, so three's more fun to watch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Star Trek II, everybody and their mother has seen this, even if you're not a Trek dork. You know, Khan has initiated the Genesis... Genesis wave, you know, and it's right. about to blow up and destroy the Enterprise. The Enterprise is caught in a rock and hard place. They have no warp drive. They can't get away in time. So, you know, Spock runs down to engineering and, you know, bullies his way into the whatever room that is where the
reactor room.
The reactor room where it's filled with radiation. So he knows he's going to go in there and die. You know, this in the throughout the whole movie, they've had this buildup of life and death and the Kobayashi Maru and sacrifice and the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one,
sure.
the few or the one, blah blah blah. But this is where it comes down to classic Trek and James Horner with the music, you know, the music that just follows Spock going down to engineering, and then the music where Spock yeah, and just every line, every image,
every moment counts.
Everything, you know, just, you know, when Scotty and Bones are trying to stop Spock, he's like, "What are you doing? Get out of there! Get out of there! Don't pull that thing off! What are you doing?" And Bones, who, you know, they have that love hate relationship. Sure. Even Bones is saying, "You're not going in there," you know.
You're out of your Vulcan mind.
Yeah, you know, and then that, you know, that shot when Bones calls up to the bridge after Spock has saved the ship. He's sure. like, "You know, better get down here. You better hurry." And then Kirk looks to Spock's seat and it's an empty seat. Mm-hmm. And then there's that music again where Kirk is running down to engineering, you know, and he runs down and he sees him in there and he's like, he's dead already. And then there's that look on Kirk where he just goes, oh, you know, just yeah. that defeat. He's like, oh. And he just walks up to him and
the needs of the many outweigh
the needs of the few.
Or the one. I never took the Kobayashi Maru test until now. What do you think of my solution?
Spock.
Always shall be your friend.
I could describe the whole scene, but you know, they talk through the glass, you know, and Spock just dies right in front of him. You
sure.
know? Beautiful scene. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's
I
don't know right what else to say you. About it. It just gets me every time.
I debated putting it in there, but I kind of tried to go a little off track than obvious. I mean, naturally that's one of my personal favorites. It's you're right, it's just like kind of all of these scenes, it is a testament of editing and music and acting and dialogue and everything. It's great. Great choice for number one.
Well, I have a few left, so we can do honorable mentions.
Okay, I have three. I won't go into detail about the scenes. I'll
tap
just mention
them off real
are.
quick.
One of them was the Braveheart. The scene at the end of Braveheart when he's being tortured.
Freedom!
And he yells freedom and everything.
Yeah.
Not just the freedom kind of gives you the chill, but the buildup is so gut-wrenching when they're, oh my God, it kills you. It just kills you to watch it.
Yeah.
You may laugh at this, but the scene at the end of L.A. Story, when she's getting on the plane
And that is a cool scene.
And he's touching the his window in his apartment. Yeah. She's touching it. The music is really what does it for me.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And I'll be damned if that thing doesn't just put
that a does get knot me every time. Throat. Yeah,
I can't begin to duplicate that.
You should have put that on your list. I wish I would have thought of that.
I debated, but it was a beautiful scene. I don't want to call it a montage because it's not.
The weather will change your life.
Yeah, twice. And then it ends with them, you know, meeting in the rain. But just that music just kills me. It's got a great build.
Oh, that is an awesome scene. You should have fucking put that in there, man.
I know. And then I
feel so jealous.
Finally, it's kind of like your Return of the Jedi moment, or no, your Abyss moment, where the two scenes add up to one. The Iron Giant, for me, again, this is kind of a Superman moment here, when the giant is standing in front of all the army people that were just trying to kill him, and they've accidentally launched the nuke, and the giant knows that he can stop it, and they see the missile going up in the sky, and they know that they've got seconds to live. And Giant looks up, says something sweet to the kid, the music, you know, very sweet. And he says, what does he say to the boy?
I don't remember.
You stay, I go, no following. And then crouches down in the best Superman thing. And
that is a pretty cool
launches one. Up. And it's the music again. It's all the music.
Yeah, doesn't he? He says... Superman.
Yeah, just as he's about to impact and collide and save them by colliding with the missile, he says Superman and closes his eyes.
That is pretty cool.
And blows up. But then, like two sequences go by, and then the continuation of that is because the giant can self-repair. The boy had delivered to him a giant bolt or something, basically, and it starts to go off. And leaves his room and rolls off, and you essentially follow that bolt through a series of fades to Iceland, where as it's rolling by, the camera goes past it and sees a finger inching by, and then another piece inching by, and then eventually comes up to the face of the giant, which is crooked, and slowly his face forms and he smiles, and the music just bam, there it is. And every time, chills for that damn animated giant.
All right, my honorable mentions, I'll just name them off real quick because we're going a little long.
Yeah.
First one is from Willow, the fight scene between Mad Mardigan and Kale, sure. When Mad Mardigan kills Kale. And my other one, these are kind of lame, that's why they're honorable mentions, from Excalibur.
O Fortuna?
O Fortuna would have been great, except it's kind of it didn't make the top this moment because it's the climax. It's the sword in water when Percival throws the sword and the hand comes up.
That's
and
good
the music
moment.
Builds. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, I mean they play that piece a lot during the movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of their theme besides O Fortuna.
Right.
But that moment when Percival throws the sword in and the hand just comes
damn
up.
Damn good moment. Yeah.
Beautiful moment. Gets me every time. I only have two. My other one's kind of lame. I don't think you're going to...
Just throw it out real quick.
It's stupid. I put it down because I thought you were going to take the Star Trek ones.
Just go.
It's from Starship Troopers.
All right, what is it? Tell me.
It's a lame-ass moment. There's no reason for me to like it. It's the scene when Johnny Rico and Xander are fighting over Carmen. The only reason I like the scene is because it has a song that I like. it's called Fade Into You by Maisie Starr. And it's a cheesy-ass scene. It's basically two guys having a pissing contest, you know, and they're just fighting over Carmen.
Yeah.
And there's this slow buildup of Fade Into You. And I love that song. It's overplayed.
Yeah.
But at the time when I first saw that scene... I thought nobody had heard this song but me, you know? So when I heard it, I was like, oh my God, they're playing that cool ass song. And, you know, and it still gets me. Just
It's a fun scene. Certainly would be nowhere near my
it's
top,
only for me, right. And it's a stupid moment.
Right.
Okay, close.
All right, that's cool. That's cool.
Close out the show. All right. I'm Josh. I'll see you later.
And I'm Justin. Catch you next time.